Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From Elysian Brewing Company. Love Elysian. Give me a Space Dust IPA right now. Love Elysian. Can you guess where that's from? The Noise.
The Noise, Kansas City?
Seattle.
Ah.
We're going with Seattle here, and for the Seahawks, the 12th man, they're loud fans. It's a pale ale, and it's 5.1%. So you got that. Fitzmagic.
Oh, that's straightforward. We know what that is.
It's for Chris.
I love that he has his own beer.
It's a double IPA. Can you guess that? And it's an 8.2%. So how about that?
Look
a
at
double
that.
IPA
stronger.
For Fitzmagic. And then that's pretty much it.
That.
That's it. So can you go down the list of what we've written down?
Okay, we've got Brady's Nightmare, Dallas Sucks, Orange Crush, Undefeated, Bill's Fight Song, Skullberry, AK-41, Ale to the Redskins, The Noise, and Fitzmagic.
You know, I'm biased, but I'm going for The Noise, and I'm going for Elysian Brewing Company. I'd try that one if I had to try any of those first. I have a feeling that you're going to go with the Orange Crush-sicle.
I do like that one. That sounds really good.
From the 408 on the Chill Not a Body Text, I'm biased ass Raider fan, Steven. Yeah.
It sounds good. Come on, an Orange Crush-sicle.
You ever had cream ale before?
No.
It's delicious. Ooh. Recommend it highly.
Got to check out that place in Livermore. That beer place. Do they have it there? I forgot the name of it. The one down that has like the taps.
You can you're talking about Hops and Sessions?
Yes. I wonder if they have that there.
There we go. Free plug for you, Hops and Sessions, at 5:52 in the
come
morning.
Visit.
So I wanted to get into this, Anna, and we've named off the beers. And so those NFL-themed beers, they're pretty interesting.
Yeah.
They're actually pretty interesting.
Creative.
I wonder what they would make for the 49ers, though. It would have to be a golden ale, right?
Yeah, you would think so with the, you know, gold and
probably be named after Jimmy Garoppolo or something like that.
He has to earn it a little more this
Nick
year
Bosa.
First. They need to earn it a little more,
ooh,
I think, this year.
Ooh, for Joe Staley, a stale ale.
Oh,
instead of
a
pale
ale.
Just call
one.
It a stale,
a stale ale.
Ale. Just call it a stale ale.
Ooh, I like that a lot, actually.
There you go. And just call it 74 block.
Or it could be 7.4%.
There we go. There we
oh
go.
Oh my gosh. We got it. You know what? I'm going to.
We're just coming up with ideas all
over
the place.
Send this to the 49ers
today.
Later today. 7.4%. Yeah, we are coming up with some good ideas. We're pretty creative people.
All right. So as we're going to continue our creative show today, because yesterday was the slowest day of the sports calendar. Now, Chilton All Body text line 95795. There is a new defensive metric. Now, I think we can all agree that as far as basketball goes and trying to evaluate defense, we're using the eye test for the most part. We can use steals. We can use blocks. We can also use rebounds even if we're going to talk defensively about a player. But and you can look at some of the – you have to look at the opposing players' kind of metrics on how they do and really go deep into it if you want to like really find out how good of a defensive player someone is. But there is a new metric out there, and this is from 538,
yes.
Nate Silver's website. It's called the Draymond, and it's a whole acronym. Now, the acronym, not that catchy. Defensive rating accounting for yielding minimal openness by nearest defender.
That is a lot of words in that.
Defensive rating accounting for yielding minimal openness by nearest defender.
Yielding minimal openness by nearest defender.
In short, Anna, it's pretty much, they got a whole bunch of math going on. I recommend going to 538.com and reading the article. It's a new way to evaluate NBA defense. And they basically have a new metric for showing how well an opponent defends a shooter. And they're calling it the Draymond. And Draymond, believe it or not, is at the top of this list. Now, there's a whole bunch of math that goes into it. There's some flaws because depending on the position you play and all that sort of stuff, you got Russell Westbrook at the bottom, but they explain it thoroughly. And so you got the Draymond. And now I think one of Draymond's strengths defensively is him closing in on shooters. I think Zion Williamson's going to have a hell of a Draymond metric.
Ooh.
So as we go forward, I'm wondering if we're going to create like if we're going to they actually made one called the Carmelo. I can't remember specifically what it's for. It's for offensive rating and for shooting. And so Draymond,
how's that looking number wise?
Draymond's statistic is based on him closing in on shooters.
Right.
So I'm wondering if we were to create, now we don't have to create a whole acronym because there's a lot that would go into that.
Yeah.
But if you were to create like a stat based on Steph Curry and you called it the Steph, what would that stat be?
Ooh.
Probably what? Like it would have to do something with like the three-point shooting.
And how quick, you know, maybe the quickness of the release, maybe something along those lines. That's kind of the first thing that comes to my mind with Steph, because that's something that he's elite at, obviously. So that's where I would
think. The quickest release?
Yeah, quick release.
Quickest release. Anna, you're onto something there.
I know.
And I'm thinking, like, as I'm going through the NBA, you're looking at, like, you're maybe looking at, say, for James Harden, you can do percentage of shots based on doing a step back and kind of go with the math on that. And then on the other side, you'd go Chris Paul with all the flops. You just
how many flops, how many calls you get, like, what kind of calls, basically?
We call it the Chris, and I don't know what the
acronym
would be.
You got to call it, like, the CP3.
That's too short, though.
I know.
You need to create like a big – the Chris. The Chris would just be a metric on how much NBA players flop.
Or maybe it could be the CP flop.
The CP flop?
That's what you could do. If you're talking specifically of flops.
CPFLOP.
Yeah, the CPFLOP.
I don't know what
Better than just calling it the Chris. I mean, it's like Chris. You don't really – how many times you just call him Chris?
There's one called the Carmelo.
And yeah, but Carmelo's different name, though. I mean, how many Carmelos out there? When you think Carmelo, you think Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
Firsthand, I don't think Chris. I don't necessarily always think CP3.
Now there's also – now we're doing this based on the Draymond.
Okay.
Now what else are we looking at?
How about the Clay? What can we do with Clay? I mean, that's the K-L-A-Y.
Damn.
Maybe that's something about two-way players. You know,
you can mix around like how often he moves off of screens and then just catch and shoot threes and how that would work. Butcher Boy's in studio
with us.
He looks like he's disgusted by the microphone right now. And he's also looking great. Looking great for 5 a.m. Not everyone does look great at 5 a.m, but this man does. I'll tell you that much. He's a sight
for sore
eyes.
When you do this day in and day out, though, it starts to falter a little bit. What's up, Butcher Boy?
I gotta go to work after this, so you know, you gotta look.
Really?
You gotta look a certain way when you're going to work.
Dude, what time do you wake up?
Respect on the hustle.
I know. What time do you wake up today?
Normally?
No, today.
Like 4:10.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's golf time for me. You know, I'm up early, excited. You know, ready to go golfing. Typically, when I wake up that early, but you know, it'd be fun to do the morning show today.
So we're just real quick. You see this Draymond stat from 538? They created a new defensive metric based on Draymond.
Oh, did they?
And it's about how defenders close in on opposing shooters and how well they defend opposing shooters. And there's a whole bunch of math that goes into it. And it's called, let me find it, defensive rating accounting for yielding minimal openness by nearest defender.
Interesting.
Is that a catchy acronym to you?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you this right now. I don't need metrics to quantify how he rotates, how he helps, how he communicates. I mean, he's the best communicator in the game when it comes to defensive presence, and his rotations off ball are the best I've ever seen in the game, especially in today's era where you switch everything and you have to help out. One of the things, if you're teaching man-to-man at any level, it's not man-to-man, it's help defense.
Right.
And the person who's farthest away has to be the most willing to help, and he's a fantastic example of how to play help defense.
This is just a whole stat. Now, guess who's the lowest in the Draymond metric right now?
I'm going to say DeMarcus Cousins.
Russell Westbrook is.
Oh,
apparently,
surprised.
He's terrible at closing in on opposing shooters. But this is just a whole new thing to kind of – because I think we have trouble evaluating defense as a whole. Most of us use the eye test, right, and using what you see.
Yes.
But not a lot of people look at it the same way as you do. So this is just another way to kind of help defensively to evaluate.
By the way, real quickly, the Carmelo stat you were talking about earlier, the career arc regression model estimator with local optimization.
Love it. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Too many numbers.
Analytics.
I mean, come
too
on.
Anna, don't be an analyst. Come on,
I'm
Joey
just saying.
Stats.
That's. Come I'm
on.
Just reading what it
oh,
says.
The numbers. Come on, coach.
Analytics.
Yeah, look at the
yeah,
eye
see,
test.
Yeah, see, analytics.
Thank
look at
analytics.
That,
Anna,
that actually on. Was... That was actually a podcast we're looking at.
Butcher Boy Covey and Lowe are in. They'll be joined by John Morosi at 9 o'clock. Don't take your shirt off, Lowe. Stop it. Ian Williams at 9:30. Steven and
it's going to be a fun
Covey,
one.
Butcher Boy, and Lowe next.
The Bay Area's number one sports station. KGMC FM and HD1 San Francisco. 95.7 The Game.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball.
Oh, is this thing on? Yeah, absolutely it's on. You better believe it's on. Oh, it's on. It's on now. Ryan Covey, Lorenzo Neal, and sitting across my partner in crime at night, the Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky.
Oh, my.
Back in the building. Lolo,
oh, my.
Got a shirt on, by the way.
I'm scared.
Yeah, we're good. Butch, what's up, baby?
I'm so fired up. What's up, bro?
Welcome home, man.
Yeah, yeah. I'm finally back from vacation and ready to spew out the hot takes, baby. A lot of stuff happened.
Where'd you go?
I went up to Russian River.
Oh,
I don't have
nice.
Any money, so, you know, it's hard for me to go somewhere special. But I went up to the Russian River, enjoyed my time up there. Lots of golf, lots of swimming, chilling with the family.
So but the Russian cares. River's not special then?
Well, to I my heart.
Okay. River. Well, he said he can't go anywhere special. I don't know. Russian River sounds pretty special to me.
Hey, look, in the Bay Area, you're either poor or you're a billionaire. That's
there you
pretty
go.
Much what it
yeah.
comes down to. There's like no middle ground here.
Kind of like the NBA.
I was going to say, Butch has been saying for months, there's no middle class in the NBA anymore, so there's not in the Bay Area.
Or Major League Baseball. There without, is no middle class.
Without question. And speaking of Major League Baseball, there's just that one game today as we're kind of in the post-gaze of the All-Star break. And let me ask you this. Lo, did you enjoy the Major League Baseball All-Star festivities in general? Are you an All-Star guy?
You know what? Did I enjoy it in general? I'd be remiss. I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it. Did I love it? No. I'm not going to lie. You watch it. You throw on the home run derby. You want to see what's happened. It was exciting to watch, you know, the guys go at it. And it was good for the young talent. You saw a lot of young talent, what these guys have to offer. And the All-Star game, you know, 4-3, very competitive. And I think if you wanted to continue to make it competitive and make sure guys participate the way that they did, home run derby and all the things, et cetera, you got to keep bringing in the young talent. The older guys, it doesn't mean what it used to mean. The it's lost its luster. And that's Pro Bowls and all those different things. Certain sports, it's just like basketball still, guys want to go. It's the fiesta. It's all
sure.
the things surrounding it. Baseball seemed like this. The studs don't necessarily want to be in the game as much.
Well, back in the day, it was Willie Mays played eight innings,
right.
nine innings.
Right.
You know, now, even in the All-Star game for basketball, in the fourth quarter, LeBron and Steph are going to be on the court.
Right.
Right? And the ball's going to be in their hands. In this game, you had 20-something, I think 27 first-time All-Stars.
Right.
So there were a lot of young players, yes. but I want to see Mike Trout get four at-bats.
Right.
I want to see Mike Trout versus whoever the Mariano Rivera is of today's game. You don't get those opportunities. I thought the coolest part of the All-Star game was CC Sabathia getting the love from Cleveland because CC's a guy who he's probably not going to get the 300 wins,
no.
but he's got the most wins of any starting pitcher in today's era. And he really felt like a guy who was a throwback player. And it's like, dude, I've watched his entire career to see him get that love from that Cleveland crowd. That was pretty special.
Do you guys, to make the All-Star game better, how about if they put in something that you couldn't do it every inning? But every other inning, if you wanted to get your guy up again, if the fans could vote to say, okay, we want to see this guy. Because just like basketball, fourth quarter, you get in to entertain. All-Star game, LeBron, Steph.
We make so much of this stuff. It's one game. It's an exhibition. Like,
yeah.
you got to see all the players. To me, everybody, this incessant
yeah.
tinkering with all the All-Star games across all platforms.
You're tired of it.
It's one game. And really, it's just about these guys, the career validation. For me, the home run derby was way more on fire than the All-Star game. The All-Star game was... The home run derby, though, dudes are mashing. They're going back and forth. They're actually playing for some scratch. Like, you got Petey Alonso mashing it up. I'm in on that.
But here's the bigger problem is that the way the All-Star game is, oh, everybody's got to be included, Lo. Everybody. The Giants have to have an All-Star. They don't even deserve an All-Star. I'm sorry. You're eight games under 500. You do not deserve an All-Star. You know who should have went? Bruce Bochy. I would have sent Bruce Bochy as an honorary member of the Giants representing the organization. That's the way baseball needs to move forward. No. Every team, the Marlins don't, even though the reliever who came in was unbelievable, the Marlins don't deserve an All-Star, in my opinion. Like, it's for the deserving teams and players, and when you turn it into a participation game instead, then it goes right into the millennial. Everyone deserves a trophy and a medal, and I'm sick of it.
And football, they got it right. Some teams, every team doesn't have to have representation.
When the Niners sucked, Andy Lee was our lone Pro Bowler because he was the best player on the team, the punter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and this just incessant tinkering to me is what gets old for a one-game exhibition that in the grand scheme of things means absolutely nothing. So we heard Rob Manfred clap back to Justin Verlander, his inflammatory remarks, which, by the way, the reason that baseball was so up in arms about him is, like a lot of things, they ring true in a lot of different areas. Now, I can't tell you with absolute certainty that the baseball has been juiced up, but I look at numbers and I watch the games and I see how far these balls are flying. That ball looks juiced to me.
Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. First off, the ballparks themselves have been getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Everybody wants to build a tinier ballpark where the fans are closer to the action, right, and they want to make it quote-unquote hitter-friendly. Atlanta, Cincinnati, you go all around the league. Petco Park even brought their fences in, I don't know, about 5, 6, 7 years ago. So every single park, they've brought the fences in. And then the balls themselves, Johnny Cueto was the first guy to tell everybody about this last year in spring training. He goes, dude, I'm getting blisters on the ball because I have to stick my fingers into the seams more because the seams aren't as pronounced as they used to be. And so you're seeing a rash of blisters. The ball has changed. There's nothing that you can say. All of the pitchers in the game have told you the physical ball has changed. We saw this in the NBA. When they changed the ball, okay, when they changed the ball, the NBA players went crazy.
Yeah,
they went absolutely crazy. When they changed the ball in baseball, what did baseball say? Deal with it. And you're seeing, obviously, the launch angle era and all these players going out there, and they're swinging out of their shoes. There's no variety. There's no diversity of guys who can come to the plate and put the ball in play.
Right, and if baseball, if that was the case, Lo, if baseball had changed the ball, which I think most people feel that they have, just come out and say it. Like, we want a ton of home runs. That's what we think is going to make our game more exciting. It's the, we want it right now, quick highlight, put it on Snapchat, instant gratification. I mean, a home run gives you all of that. If they would just come out and be transparent in all this, I think people would be much more apt to say, okay, and then you move on.
So I'm glad Dib's not here. I don't get the flag.
See, oh, yeah, you might have got it. You might have got it.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I'm not a hater like Dib.
Don't worry. Let it go.
Steven, I'm surprised you're not, you know, doing what you always do.
We look out for each other. Yeah. Oh, see, we'd rather look out for you, Lo.
I can appreciate that. Yeah. It's interesting to watch the way sports are moving. And we want to cater to the millennials. We want to cater to certain things. Sometimes I go to church, and I go to the old church, and they sing the old hymns, Amazing Grace and all those things. And then you have a new pastor and new things, and then you got the new songs coming out, and Kirk Franklin, and it's all upbeat, and it's stomp and shout and all these different things. It's rapping and all those different, and you're losing a generation, though. You're losing the old soldiers, the old people that came up, the grandma and grandpa, the uncles and aunt that came up in church when it was, give me that old time religion. So you've lost the foundation. And so we become catering to what the new, the millennials and stuff, in which they are not sustainable. If you lose the old and you don't mix it in and have them older teach the young, hey, this is still tradition, this is right, how it is, and understand, and then we can still play the good music and have some balance, you can make baseball work. And baseball's the same way. Because you're tampering and doing all these different things, analytics and all those things are fine, but there's a generation that don't like that.
They can't relate to it.
They can't relate to it. So you got to have inclusion, because you're trying to cater to the new generation, the millennials, that just say it's analytics and money, but all those different things surrounding. And now, because it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, you get all these fancy numbers, because now you're taking away the old-fashioned, hey, it meets the eye test. You want to put education behind it, and you want to do all these things, and you're losing people. So until baseball understands how to bring it together and mix that pot, I think it's going to continue to struggle.
It's a television product. That's the problem with baseball. They don't realize that they are a television product. It used to be a radio product.
Yeah.
Nobody would go to the games. You'd listen on the radio, and you can have tons and tons of inventory and hours of programming because there was nothing on the radio. All right. Nowadays, with the way our viewing habits are, it's a television product. And to be honest, it's a boring television product. If you switch pitchers, most people switch channels, yeah, period. And if I switch channels, I'm probably going to stick to whatever reality television or whatever is going on another channel, because it's more enticing, it's more exciting. And I go back to the baseball game and I'm like, oh, it's another commercial. Oh, Buster Posey already hit, and I don't want to watch, you know, Dickerson hit or whoever, whatever 4A ball player the right Giants bring up that week.
Well, with that being said, on the other side, why don't you guys tell me a solution
Oh, we want to be solution-oriented?
I mean, I'm going to go solution. All right. Since you gave me all the negative, tell me how we're going to fix this thing.
All right, well, we'll fix it. Coming up on the other side, we'll fix baseball, Butch. Joe Shasky, Ryan Covey, Lorenzo Neal, the lovely Anna Kakarakis sitting across from me as well. It is the morning show right here on 95.7 The Game. Open for business on a Thursday, Holler.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
What's happening, everybody? Top of the morning. Ryan Covey sitting in for Joe Fortenbaugh. Joe Shasky sitting in for Dan Dibley. Low Neal. Well, he's Low Neal, and he's sitting in for Dan Dibley. All right, well, Low called it out. It's the solution oriented, y'all.
Help us out, everybody.
Help us out. Major League Baseball.
Wake up and help us out.
Yeah, and there you know what? I'll say this much. How about miking up the players like they did, y'all, at in the All-Star game the other day? That kind of on-field access, that extra level of access, that's for a fan, that's exciting because we want to know what's going on. We want to know what these conversations are. And I know you can't do a lot of that stuff live because it'll give away some of the strategy to the game. But to the ability that you can, give us more of that.
Well, yeah, and it would also require miserable people like Madison Bumgarner to allow people to actually have fun and be themselves, right? Like, that's one of the key elements in this, is that stop throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs at people's faces if they celebrate a little. Like, allow for some expression, allow for some individuality. I mean, we have no problem in the NFL. If you score a touchdown, hey, you're allowed to celebrate any way you want now. But for some reason, there are certain people who think that they are the sheriff of the game, the fun police, and they want to throw 100-mile-an-hour fastballs at people to regulate what they determine, their sensibilities, what's right and what's wrong on the diamond. And I think that that is a huge element that's holding the game back. And again, there's just too much inventory. This is a television show, and from a television show product, there's too much inventory and it's too boring. So there's really no sense of urgency for the watcher to dive into game 75.
And do you want Madison Bumgarner mic'd up? What if he's not saying anything? What is it? Is it a good watch for everyone? You know, some guys are just, and some guys don't like it. Sometimes it's in their mind, mentally, they're trying to go through the things that they have to do, and they just don't want that outside distraction.
Well, I'm sure some of them would be cool with it, though, right?
The ones Pablo, that are cool.
Yeah.
You wouldn't enjoy Pablo mic'd up?
Absolutely. Seeing him drop deuces in the bathroom and go like Instagram, I'd love it. I mean, you know? Hell, a lot of people would love it.
But it shouldn't be a mandatory thing, but if players are willing to do that, I think.
You think that could help? So you think,
I mean, in some way, it's not going to be the end-all, be-all. That's going to fix everything.
Where are you at then when you see, okay, no revenue's good, but you look at attendance. Even the A's, they got a pretty good product, can hit the long ball, can, you know.
They're an exciting team.
Their attendance is still down.
Yeah.
The Giants, down. Well, I mean, yeah, we know the Yankees and the Boston. We know who's the sheriffs. We get that. So how do you change this culture? What is some of the solution? Well, okay, mic them up. That's one.
Well, you hit on something key, Low, in the first segment.
When I was preaching.
When you were preaching, when you're in the pulpit doing your thing.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, and I saw this, I'm a big hockey fan, I saw the NHL go through this years ago with their moron commissioner Gary Bettman, which is the incessant need to tinker with everything to usher in a new generation of fan, right? To make sure we grab as much of a fan base as we can. Let's cast as wide a net as possible. But what you do in the process, when you change the game like that incessantly and you're constantly moving things around, and now, you know, they're juicing baseballs and shortening up parks and they're trying to appeal to this new generation of fan, what you do is you alienate the old guard, the true fans that you have. And I got to admit, while I try and appreciate and be mindful that you need to be accepting of change, change just for the sake of trying to, you know, make more money and just all this incessant tinkering with the game, it gets old, man. It's like there was a game that I grew up watching and loving. Right. And to me, there was nothing wrong with baseball when I was a kid. So why do we have to change everything all the time?
And when you guys are saying tinkering, Butcher, when he's talking about Covey saying have their tinkering, and they're saying because they want to grab the big net and bring everyone in, are they really getting more fans? Or is it the little fish that's sliding? You thought you brought them in, but they're flying right through the net.
And you're alienating you're alienating your biggest fans. Sorry, Lo.
No.
Yeah, that's what you're doing, I think.
It's not just the fans, guys. You're losing out on the elite athlete players. Kyler Murray was a top 10 pick in baseball and said, nah, I'd rather play football. Even though we all know that football is a more violent sport, we know that there's so many different unknown quantities in football. His career could be over in a couple of years. Yet he chose to play football over baseball. Dave Winfield, way back when, four decades ago, chose baseball over the other three sports that he was drafted in. Ricky Henderson could have played football. He chose baseball. We're seeing athletes after athletes after athletes.
John Lynch, Elway.
Exactly. They all are choosing other sports other than baseball. And so what happens is baseball is losing out on the extreme athletes that they used to rely on. There's no athleticism in the game like there used to be.
Is that true? Okay, I ask you a question. How many college, honestly, if you weren't, yeah, if you weren't necessarily, we weren't in media, how many baseball, how many high school baseball games have you attended? How many college baseball teams?
Well, I go to high school baseball games because I coach a lot of kids who play at the high school level. So okay. I'll go to maybe one or two a year. You know, I'm not going to, who the heck is sitting out at Big Rack over here in Golden Gate Park scouting high schoolers? Like, that's ridiculous. College baseball isn't something that's on television, so you don't consume it. College football is perfect. It's on a platter. It's Saturdays. You get to know everybody. If you play for Alabama, I know who the backup quarterback is at Alabama.
Right, yeah. That's the biggest thing. That's why I wanted to get you there, is because think about on Fridays. Tell me, sometimes you're at home, you flick through the stations, they got a Friday night football game, high school.
Hey.
You know?
Yeah, I'm in.
Saturday, you're watching football. Baseball, you don't see. So what players do you know? You look at football, you're watching, even you get your girl or a girlfriend, whoever you might be with, you might be watching football on a Saturday, and she's, oh, that was a cool, that player. Oh, who is, what's his name? Basketball, the same. Baseball, you don't get it. So how can you get the fans?
Well, because you also have less inventory. So there's a sense of urgency from a viewer to actually pay attention and watch every game. There's only going to be 12 Alabama games. I know that going in. So, hey, if I can dedicate 3 or 4 hours for 8 Saturdays, I have a pretty good feel who Alabama is. I don't have 200 days a year to watch, you know, the Rangers or to watch the Tampa Bay Rays. Like, that's just ridiculous to me. I think there's way too much inventory in baseball. I love the game of baseball. But for me, 162 games is disproportionate to the playoff payoff, as I call it, because you're not including enough teams and enough fan bases in. Shorten the regular season, turn it into a tournament, create more playoff baseball. Playoff baseball is must watch because there's sense of urgency. Everybody agrees there. The way football is structured.
Make college better, Logan. Then how do you?
We don't need
better?
College to be
you
better
don't,
okay, because
yeah, I don't think so.
You also have to look at all the best players right now.
Right.
Juan Soto, he didn't go to college. I mean, Bryce Harper, he didn't go to college. Like, there's a lot of great players in the game right now who didn't go to college. I think going back to the hockey thing, part of what baseball has an issue with, and it's not an issue, it's just the reality, because a lot of the players are foreign players with names that a lot of people find hard to pronounce. They're having an issue with connecting to people, whereas football has a built-in advantage of 2 to 3 years of name recognition. We know who Trevor Lawrence is, and he's only played one season of college football.
We already know how to pronounce Tua Tagovailoa.
Exactly. Whereas you look at some of the young players who are playing, you know, just look at the young guy who plays center field, Acuña Jr., for the Atlanta Braves. I mean, I bet if we polled him amongst all young players, nobody would know who he is. Right. Yeah. You know, but we all know who Tua is for Alabama. He's the lefty quarterback who came in and subbed in for Jalen Hurd and took that team to a national championship. So I just think the sense of urgency is where baseball has completely lost everyone, because it's a television product. That's what it is. And if they start treating it like a television product, they're going to change the game themselves.
All right, we will get into this conversation more coming up. And I know you guys saw this, and I definitely want to talk to you about Bud Selig's book and some of the comments that he made about Major League Baseball and about Barry Bonds. Oh, Bud Selig is at it again. So we'll get into that. Also, the Atlantic League, guys, is going to debut robot umps and tinker with the notion of allowing players to steal first base. We'll tell you what that entails coming up on the other side. By the way, this segment was brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
The Celebrity Cash Contest, all this week on The Damon Bruce Show.
Let's go ahead and welcome our first celebrity of the day on the Dial Pad guest line. Who are you?
My name is Don Nelson. I used to coach the Warriors.
Don Nelson.
Is Ray Rotto there?
He certainly is.
Are you still fat?
Are you still high? Steve Wozniak is on the line, apparently. Is this true, Steve?
Hi, this is Steve Wozniak. Very nice to talk to you.
Who is this?
Hey, this is Gavin Newsom. Thanks for voting for me.
This is definitely not Gavin Newsom.
No, it's Tommy John.
Tommy John.
The Celebrity Cash Contest, all this week on The Damon Bruce Show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Joe Lowandibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, top of the morning. It is Ryan Covey, Joe Shasky, and Lorenzo Neal. Butch and I will be sitting in the next couple of days for Joe and Dibs. And Lorenzo Neal, of course, here and accounted for. All right, so Bud Selig, of course, former commissioner of Major League Baseball, coming out with a book. And we know Barry Bonds can be a polarizing figure, but here in the Bay Area, I think by and large, he gets a lot of love and for some pretty obvious reasons. But Bud Selig spoke for in his upcoming book, For the Good of the Game. He said he had some inflammatory remarks about Barry Bonds, and I'll just paraphrase. Oh, I can read a little quote here. The summer of 2007 was unpleasant for me, and when I look back, that's putting it mildly. It was one of the few times in my life I wasn't excited about going to ballparks, and if you know me, that's all you need to know. So, of course, that was when Barry Bonds was on his famous home run chase. This whole notion of Bud Selig sticking his nose up in the air at somebody like Bonds, it just rings so false for so many reasons, because he was clearly the beneficiary as the guy that presided over the steroid era, as the guy that, quote, saved baseball. But here he is scoffing at Barry Bonds. And I think a lot of it, fellas, has to do with his affinity for Hank Aaron. And so, of course, Bonds would have to take a backseat to that. But just these comments, I feel like, are so out of pocket and just out of touch.
The guy's a fraud. Can we just, like, call it what it is? Like, Bud Selig sucks. He's sucked forever. He's always sucked. And he will continue to suck as long as he is breathing on this earth. The guy is a fraud. And I think that the image that's so encapsulates Bud Selig's time as commissioner is when Bonds did break the record, he stood up and had his hands in his pockets because that was his form of protest so that he wouldn't, you know, cheer Barry on. Meanwhile, Hank Aaron, the guy that he has this affinity for, did a video tribute for Barry Bonds that they released immediately after Bonds broke the record. Look, the Bud Selig thing bothers me so much. First off, it's an absolute crying joke that this guy's in the Hall of Fame. Every commissioner deserves to be. No, they don't. He does not. He presided over the game during a strike. He presided over the game during the first tie in the All-Star game. And here's the part that you could bring up the steroid era till you're blue in the face. But if I'm an A's fan, or if I'm a team of a small market squad, this guy ruined baseball because he created the revenue sharing program. See, he was part owner of the Milwaukee Brewers, and then he gave ownership to his daughter and then became commissioner, and then changed the rules of baseball so that his daughter could get a welfare check as owner of the Brewers. This drives me absolutely bonkers. This guy catered to his particular family and put money on their plate year after year, even though they had a terrible business being run as the Brewers baseball team, and then switched them from the American League to the National League for no reason. Wow. Bud Selig is a joke. He's a fraud as a commissioner. He has no business being in the Hall of Fame. Roger Clemens, Pete Rose, not in the Hall. Bud Selig in the Hall. It's a joke.
Wow. Wow. That was...
Tell us how you really feel.
Man.
I hate him. Man, I seriously hate him. He's done a disservice to the game.
Strong words. You came hard in the paint. My goodness. For one, I didn't know about his daughter and him, you know, switching, you know, wealth and doing that, his revenue share. You're right. It's not necessarily right. Do I hate the guy? No. Do I dislike what he did? Absolutely. I think that you got to realize he's talking about he didn't like this, but yet and still he was getting paid. He was getting paid because of what Barry Bonds and what Sammy Sosa and what the Bash Brothers and what everyone was doing. Look what it did for baseball. Revenue was great. Baseball was at its all-time high. Why? You couldn't turn on a TV. You're talking about baseball was great for radio. It was unbelievable for TV.
Absolutely.
And you can't tell. I was remember playing in New Orleans. I remember when they Sammy Sosa and Big Mac was going at it, and they would, you know, do the home run and come in and punch one another in the stomach. It was unfriggin' believable. I couldn't wait to get home. I'm playing in the pros. I'm watching. I'm in the NFL, and everyone. It's on SportsCenter. It's on stations. People are watching, and it's must-watch TV. So when people talk about hell, like, oh, baseball wasn't exciting and baseball lost, they saved baseball, and the commissioner benefited after on it, on the back of those guys, whether it's steroids or not. People came to the park to watch these guys, and they enjoyed every minute of it. And now, now you're talking about a commissioner that wrote books, and now he's getting paid again, and he's exploiting and talking about different guys who he didn't like. I think it is kind of hypocritical. But
the guy made $40 million a year as commissioner of the game. How much more money do you need? Anytime somebody writes a book, I raise an eyebrow and I'm like, really? You're writing a book for profit? Why couldn't you have
the charity?
Where was the gumption and the courage to step forward during the actual steroid era and actually stand up for the sport when you were paid to do so? How about this blue ribbon committee for the Oakland A's fans? Where's that? Where is the results of the blue ribbon committee for building the stadium, which was 15 years ago? Still haven't seen anything there. We've seen no progress whatsoever. And that's why I get angry with this guy. Steroid era, put that to the side. Forget all of that stuff. Because that's obviously makes its own case. What about what he's done? Like the disservice to Oakland A's fans and allowing his buddy who runs the Oakland A's to just tread water in the worst stadium in pro sports and find no solution. Where is the commissioner stepping in to help the Tampa Bay Rays and their stadium issues? Like, that's where I have a bigger issue. Your job as the leader of the game is to have foresight and to understand that all of the teams need to be profitable. Like, they wouldn't allow this in the NFL, would they? They would say, hey, you need to relocate. You need to figure out your stadium situation. Unlike all the other sports, Bud Selig just stuck his hands in his pockets just like he did the night Bonds broke the record, and he's done nothing. Anybody could have presided over the game when these TV contracts were being dealt, and they would have made profit as well. I'm so sick of hearing that argument.
Yeah, and how many commissioners do we applaud for presiding over an era where the sport flourished economically? Are you kidding me? Like, sports inherently grow more popular right. by the day. It crosses over into pop culture in every avenue.
Absolutely.
A complete moron, which, by the way, I think a lot of the commissioners are, by the way, they could do the same job and do it probably infinitesimally better.
It's unbelievable.
And then the fact that the guy puts himself in the Hall of Fame, basically. And you talk about,
joke.
The term conflict of interest just rings so true with the situation with the Brewers and his daughter and then presiding over Major League Baseball. I'd be curious, is there anyone out there, 95795, is there a Bud Selig fan like anywhere in the Bay Area? Is there anybody that looks at this guy and says, no, his legacy's solid. Think about what he did for the game.
But that's what I always tell people, the golden rule. He who owns the gold rule. You know what? And you see, this is Bud at his finest, does that for his daughter, the revenue share, because you know, you're not running an organization right. Think about what he was able to do. And that's darn near crime. More crime has been committed, I say it all the time, with a pen and a paper and a briefcase than any ski mask and gun. And you get to see it on the corporate level all the time, and it goes unpunished. Why? Because who owns the goal usually rules.
Yeah, and his big thing was he introduced the wild card game. Great. Wow, you allowed an extra couple of teams into the... Thank you, Bud Selig, for this revolutionary idea of wild card. Every sport allows more teams into the playoffs, and then you finally got around to adding some teams into the playoffs. Yeah. Congratulations for this unbelievable outside-the-box idea.
And by the way, the same idea that the NFL had been doing for years. I think you played a pretty famous wild card game one time, Lo.
Yeah.
And, if you think about it, like... The wild card even is screwed up because the season is so painfully long at 162 games, and then a team could spend 162 games, play baseball for half a year, and get an opportunity to play one game, right?
Yeah.
One game? You're a playoff team for a day. Like, congratulations. And A's fans know this better than anybody. That rule in itself is just so ridiculous that you could, quote, be a playoff team, but you're one and done. It's absurd. Make it at least a three-game series.
Well, and then I keep going back to the same thing. You threw the Brewers from the American League to the National League and then moved the Astros from the National League to the American League. I still don't understand that move. It makes absolutely no sense. Oh, other than the fact that his daughter wanted to have more games against the Cubs and the Cardinals so that they could print more money. That's the only reason. You're telling me there's no interest involved there? There's no nepotism?
Wow.
Like, get out of here. Even the President of the United States has to divest his interest into other businesses that would be a conflict of interest for him running the country, right? So if you're running the game of baseball, how is your family still allowed to operate one of the teams that you're supposed to be governing over?
It's a good point. Absolutely. All right. We'll get into some more of those comments. By the way, the Damon Bruce Show has given you a chance to win $5,000. It's simple. Get the biggest celebrity you know to call the following number, 844-999-GAME, between the hours of 2 and 6 p.m. Contest runs all week. Biggest name of the day wins $1,000. Biggest name of the week wins $5,000. Again, the number to call is 844-999-GAME. All the details at 957thegame.com. The Celebrity Calling Contest presented by Dialpad. Make smarter calls. All right, coming up in the next hour, fellas, we got to do this. We're going to do our version of the ESPYs. We're going to get into the BESPYs. We got some awards to hand out for Bay Area athletes and teams. Nice. We'll show a little love in the next hour. The ESPYs, I think, they were fun. It's a slow week for sports, but I think the ESPYs did a nice job last night. I definitely enjoyed some of that. So we'll get into all that conversation. It's Joe Shasky. It's Ryan Covey. It is Lorenzo Neal. You're listening to 95.7 The Game.
The Celebrity Cash Contest, all this week on The Damon Bruce Show.
Let's go ahead and welcome our first celebrity of the day on the Dial Pad guest line. Who are you?
My name is Don Nelson. I used to coach the Warriors.
Don Nelson.
Is Ray Rado there?
He certainly is.
Are you still fat?
Are you still high? Steve Wozniak is on the line, apparently. Is this true, Steve?
Hi, this is Steve Wozniak. Very nice to talk to you.
Who is this?
Hey, this is Gavin Newsom. Thanks for voting for me.
This is definitely not Gavin Newsom.
No, it's Tommy John.
Tommy John.
The Celebrity Cash Contest, all this week on The Damon Bruce Show. Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, top of the morning, Ryan Covey sitting in for Joe Fortenbaugh. I got my partner in crime at night, Butcher Boy Joe Shasky to my right, Lorenzo Neal sitting across from me. 6:50 in the morning. Hope everybody's having a nice Thursday morning as you saunter on to work. Just go easy out there on the roadways. We'll get you into work nice and smooth here on 95.7 The Game. Did you guys see this? The Atlantic League is going to debut robot umpires. And this is another rule change that I wanted to throw your way, guys. The ability to steal first base, and not just on a drop third strike where we see that in baseball, on any passed ball would give the opportunity for a player to run to first base. This seems gimmicky to me, but I think just if we take a step back, in the moment, a lot of rule changes sound gimmicky at the time, and then they end up being good changes for the game.
Yeah, I don't know how to think about this one, because if you've ever been to a Little League game, like one of the big issues with Little League games is on a third strike when the catcher drops the ball, because they always drop the ball in Little League games, you're just gifting first base to these kids. So you have like a five-hour game because the kid has 18 strikeouts and you can only record like four outs. For the Major League level, this would make it disproportionate value for the catching position itself. Like you would definitely have to invest heavily into a catcher. And then also for the pitching perspective, you know, we always talk about you could waste a pitch here, throw one in the dirt, waste a pitch, throw one in the dirt. I mean, now you're eliminating that completely.
That's a good call, actually.
You're eliminating that completely. And then you're also asking in a league where it's so heavily tilted now toward power and strikeouts that, hey, now we want to introduce some speed elements into this game. So I don't know, man. Gimmicky isn't even the word I would use to begin. I want to know why this particular rule would even get brought up. To me, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I don't like it. I think that you say, okay, a ball's thrown away. Now you're giving a guy free to run. He didn't do anything on his own. He's not even swinging because a ball got away from him. Now he can just run to first base. I don't like it. It's interesting that they even this is very gimmicky. I think that they're reaching. What is it supposed to do? What are they thinking?
They're thinking, let's get more action into the game because there's strikeouts and home runs. Nobody's moving on the actual field. Like when the balls hit out, the left fielder, he'll track it till it goes over the fence, but that's it. So they're trying to get more action into the game.
Action on the base pass, I think, is what it is.
How about get back to small ball, for goodness sakes? Get more bunts in, try to do something, get some singles? My goodness,
average.
Let's go back
hit for average, exactly.
We don't do that anymore. Yeah.
Who would ever bunt if they knew they could crank a ball 500 feet into a cove, right?
Yeah, but strikeout are at an all-time high because it's all about the big ball. It's a home run or bust. It used to be Tony Gwynn, rest in peace, loved that guy.
One of the greatest players ever.
Oh, loved him.
Totally agree.
I'd have camps down in San Diego, me and T. Gwynn. I spent some quality time with
him.
Pick
that name up.
Yeah.
Hold on. You just dropped T. Gwynn over there. Yeah. May he rest in peace. But you just dropped him.
Batter up. He had a chicken batter. He was working to call batter up. Me and T. Gwynn, man, that was my boy. I mean, T.
You and T. Gwynn?
Oh, yeah.
All right. But there's no variety, Lo.
Oh, exactly.
And you're right.
You know, Griffin, those cats, they hit. It was you wanted to see T. Gwynn. You knew that he understood the importance of, if I can get on base, someone else is going to do it. You look at when Atlanta had their run. They had guys that can get on base. It wasn't necessarily all, but you want to see the long ball too, but where's the variety? I think the guys just lost the art of hitting too.
Wade Boggs, Tony Gwynn, Ichiro. I can name so many players who were my favorite players because they went with the pitch and they found a way to get on base in unconventional ways. Line drives, bloopers, gap singles. Like, these guys were great hitters. And the thing that kills me more than anything is the ball is not in play enough, so you don't get to see the athleticism of the defense. You don't get to see guys running the bases. Like, one of the most exciting plays in today's game is the triple, right?
Yeah.
And now we know that
ball's humming around.
Exactly.
Like right.
Or first to third. You just don't see that often anymore. And so it's just it's killing the game because the ball's not in play enough, because they found out through analytics that even if you do make a good bunt, you get to first base, well, you're probably not going to score anyway. You're more likely to hit a home run than you are to score from first base in most scenarios. So it's become a numbers game.
Tell Ricky Henderson that.
I agree with you.
You know,
I agree with you.
I know what you're saying.
But you wouldn't allow a guy to steal 130 times in a season now. Like, what manager is going to sit there and be like, analytic GM who's getting paid $7 million a year, even though I'm only making $500,000 a year as the head coach, I want Ricky Henderson to steal 130 times this year. They just wouldn't allow it, and that sucks.
Yeah, and by the way, keep it right here. And coming up in just a few minutes, guys, we're going to hand out some hardware, our own version of the ESPYs, the best ESPYs, fellas. We're going to give out some awards to some athletes and some teams around the Bay Area. Another rule change I wanted to get into, and this has to do with the NBA. The NBA Board of Governors have passed the implementation of an in-game challenge flag for head coaches in the 2019-2020 season. You'll get one challenge a game. This seems like, on the surface, this is good, because how often do we hear, oh, that's a terrible call? Coaches are looking for a little bit of get back. We have reviews now in basketball, and now the coaches can have a say. You get one challenge per game, and if you don't get it right, like in the NFL, you basically lose a timeout. Now, you have to have a timeout in order to challenge a play. I think, though, this gives coaches, and it'll have to be strategic, but it gives coaches a little bit of get back if they feel like they've been burned.
Yeah, I just don't understand what the parameters are of this. Am I allowed to challenge block charges? Am I allowed to challenge just any old play? And then what if the referees, which we saw in the NBA Finals and all throughout the playoffs, what if they're having a horrible night and I need to challenge like four or five plays down the stretch?
Well, you can't.
I know, but that sucks to me. Like, again, I understand why you would even open that Pandora's box, but now that you're having me and allowing me to challenge one play, why can't I challenge two or three? What if I get it right? I can't challenge another one? What if Steve Jabby's having a bad night? Ed Malloy, who has terrible nights every single night, it seems, why can't I challenge multiple calls? Like, I don't understand why we would even introduce this.
Yeah, you can challenge whether a field goal was worth 2 points or 3 points, and if a player got the shot clock off, the ball before the shot clock expired. So there you go.
They should be challenging those automatically. Like, the league should have somebody, an eye in the sky, already reviewing those. Those should be not even challenge worthy.
They want to get that right anyway. And they have those, though. Was it a three? We see all the time.
Yes.
And the game continues to go. They don't slow down play. They just take it off the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. Like, that wasn't a two. His foot was on the line. It wasn't a three. So
you can also contest a personal foul charged to their team, a called out of bounds violation, a goaltending or a basket interference violation as well. So you'll have get back on a foul call. A personal foul.
Yeah, and hopefully the personal foul, that stuff I don't like as much. If the other stuff, I think that the officials, they try to do a good job. They'll look and say, hey, I might have missed that. But when you start getting into fouls and doing certain things, I think you're going to see officials also be like, this coach challenging me. I think you can get some backlash and guys, because officials can call on every single play.
But we have this in the NFL, right?
That's why I'm saying the NFL, they're just like, it's a different animal. It's different. Because it's a contact sport, and guys are getting their hands in. If you're in, you know, you could call holding, but they won't. They know that's what basketball. You see some of these hand checks. Guys are calling. Coach officials want to get control of the game early. They're not. I'm not going to allow it. So, bam, they're quick with the whistle to get. And so Now you're going to ask them, challenge that? I don't like that.
And there's no context to replay. Like, when you're watching replay, it's slow motion, and you're not understanding the physicality of the play prior or that particular play. And I feel like whenever you look at anything in slow motion, you can interpret it
absolutely
a million different ways. I don't want these referees having any more control than they already have. I need some explanations on some of these calls. I want to see them in the post game explaining themselves. Screw the challenge. I want to hear Ed Molloy talk after the game. I want accountability.
And how many times have you seen these guys in football, baseball as well, that you see a call and it and you see it to us? It's a friggin' blatant foul.
Right.
I mean, think about a couple weeks ago. You saw Stephen Vogt come into third. He was safe for the Giants, and he was safe. He beat the ball, and they called him out. They go replay it and still called him out. And everyone saw that Stephen Vogt made it. How many times you see in football, something happens, you're like, man, that's a bang-bang play. Or, man, that should be totally overturned. And it's not. Officials still, they got to be like, okay, I don't care. Well, sometimes they go and do it. And how many times we've seen the call doesn't get reversed?
But there's no perfect way to do this unless you want to make everything subject to replay and review, in which case we're worried about pace of play and games dragging on. That's only going to stand to magnify if we want to review every little thing. What this does, this just little rule change right here, it gives each coach one chance a game to be able to actually have something at their discretion reviewed in an official capacity, which I think that's long overdue in that respect.
Yeah, for me, I would rather have the trade-off for me, forget the challenge flags. Just get the calls right, and after the game, I want to talk to the referees. Like, if you're, for example,
they're going to miss calls, though.
But the DeMarcus Cousins put back in the finals, which was clearly over the cylinder, and he put it back in. They went, they reviewed it, they got it wrong. And then afterwards, it's like, hey, we'll send you a two-minute report, a little piece of paper, but nobody's going to talk at a podium, so there's no accountability whatsoever. Forget the challenge flags. I want to hear these referees explain themselves after the game. They want to insert themselves into the game and call these egregious mistakes all over the court, yet they don't want to be accountable in the postgame. I would rather them be accountable.
By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Well, this is the first step, I think, and this is something that coaches have been pining for a while, which is the ability. Because, you know, if you're Steve Kerr and you're sitting there thinking, oh, in the NFL, they got their challenge flags. Major League Baseball's got this replay review system now. Where's my chance to weigh in? And now this will be separate employment for somebody else to, you know, your challenge coach, you know, some guy sitting back in a room looking at a monitor, because this stuff's going to have to be quick. They haven't explained fully how it's going to work in game. I know that the coach will basically have to call a timeout, but, you know, how long do you have to review something? Because you're going to want to check something out.
But it goes to the official. But at the end of the day, like you're saying, Butcher Boy, it's still going to be up to the official,
exactly.
Right? That we saw, like you talked about with freaking Cousins. That ball came off the cylinder, and he tips it back in, and then they all looked, they put their eyes on it, and they still said no. So that's the thing. If you're going to do it, then have a separate party that weighs in on it and let them have the decision. Take it away from the official.
I 100% agree. And the other thing is, from a strategy standpoint, if I'm Steve Kerr, I'm pulling a Belichick. First possession, I'm running Steph off three or four different screens. I'm throwing a challenge flag. I'm like, Danny Green's holding Steph Curry right out of the gate. And I'd be like, why don't you call that foul? And then I set the tone for the entire game. You cannot hand check, grab, clutch, touch Steph Curry off ball. That's what I would do every single game throughout the entire playoffs.
Yeah, and then there's your one challenge for the game. So if they don't take that to heart and actually implement that as the game goes on, then you're not have a chance to challenge something later on that you may really desperately need to challenge.
Yeah, but now I'm giving a personal foul to whoever's guarding Steph Curry, and I'm setting the tone for the physicality that's allowed off ball. See, that's the way I would use the challenge flag right out of the gates, strategically, because the way you ref the game during the regular season is not how you're refing it during the postseason. Steph is allowed to run around, and no one touches him in the regular season. Then in the playoffs, for some
grabbing
reason,
him, holding
oh, Fred VanVleet literally wore him like a backpack.
Yeah,
I mean, it was ridiculous.
You guys ready to give some awards away?
Let's do it.
All right, a little best piece for you this morning. Joe Shasky, Ryan Covey, and Lorenzo Neal. Anna Kagaraka sitting across from me as well. All right, guys, so we can't give away all the awards in the ESPYs, and we want to keep it Bay-centric, of course, so it is our version here, the best piece. Let's start, guys, with best coach of the year. Now, this will be the previous season for the Warriors, the Sharks, the A's, the Giants, last football season for the Raiders and the 49ers. We wiggled it down to three. Bob Melvin of the A's, Peter DeBoer of the San Jose Sharks, and some dude named Steve Kerr of the Golden State Warriors. Lorenzo Neal, Who you got? And by the way, check in on the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Peter DeBoer, Steve Kerr, or Bob Melvin?
Peter DeBoer, what he's been able to do is unbelievable for the Sharks. You know, he's always got this team in the playoffs. They're always competing hard. Steve Kerr, five times going to the NBA finals. It's friggin' amazing. Built a dynasty. Has a lot of great talent there. Bob Melvin, to me, what he's been able to do with less, what he's been able to do with the rotating door, because Billy Beane, the way the system sets up, trading guys in and out of rotations, you don't know who's going to be here. For him to still be able to compete, for me, that's coaching. Because coaching, when I got it, it's easy to coach. Give me the best athletes in the world, and I'll give you a championship. Give me just average guys, and you don't know who's going to be able to plug in, and let me see them compete. That's guy that's coaching. So me, I'm going with old Bobby Melvin. Bobby Melvin.
I'm going to take Steve Kerr. And Bob Melvin's a great choice. I like that choice a lot. Nobody had the A's having the second half that they had last year. Fantastic. But they lost the one-game wild card. Yeah. And part of him and Billy's decision was to start that starter. And for me, you got to win at least something in the postseason. So Steve Kerr being able to go through the adversity of losing Kevin Durant in the Houston series.
Three others, all-stars.
I mean, just still, but you had to do it. You had to go out and do it. And then to go out and sweep the Portland Trail Blazers and to take Toronto when you were completely hobbled and you're playing DeMarcus Cousins just weeks after straining his entire quad. I'm going to go with Steve Kerr. Even though they fell short, I think it's Steve Kerr for me.
Yeah. Steve Kerr for me as well. You go to five straight finals. He's the best coach to me in the Bay Area, far and away. I got to go Steve Kerr. Sorry, man. Bob Melvin losing in the one game playoff. It's a nice story, but
Does he got an MVP on his guy on his team? Does Bob Melvin got an MVP?
Matt Chapman was the hottest player second half of baseball last year. Had more extra base hits than anyone.
Is he the MVP? I'm going to ask you a question. Was he the MVP?
No, Curry wasn't the MVP last year.
Was Steph, does he have any previous MVPs? He's got not one. He's got two. He's not got three. He got three MVPs. Dornier, you look at what they have. I get it. I understand. And I respect you guys totally, what you guys are saying. But don't discredit a guy that constantly has to deal with different rotations. A guy that constantly have to see these players go in and out. Can't necessarily control because that's the way, you know, that's the way that Billy Beane does his organization. I get it. Bob Melvin, if you're talking about great coaching, that's phenomenal coaching. Let's see what Steve Kerr does this year.
I agree.
Let's see. Now, we're going to talk about X's and O's. Yeah. Now, you guys know, I'm going to hear the same. We're going to have this conversation next year. I want you guys to be on the same bench, same church, same pew.
97 wins, by the way, in a division where you're going up against the Houston Astros as well. That's a pretty...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.